2022 draft, the Houston Rockets select Jabari Smith Jr., Auburn University.
Hey, Perk, you were right.
I love it. H-Town stands up.
McDonald's All-American, he gets selected number 3 overall.
What's good? It's C. Wood back at you again with another hard-hitting episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Ball About the South, it is that sports podcast where we talk real sports and we do it with real Southern flavor. My name is Kerry Wood. Just call me C. Wood for short. At C. Wood on sports, on Twitter and IG is where you can find me. And the clip that you just heard was Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, making the third pick overall of the 2022 NBA draft, where my favorite team in the NBA, the Houston Rockets, selected Jabari Smith out of Auburn University. And if you have not listened to my show, if you don't know me from social media or whatever, you know that I'm a huge Alabama fan. So I don't get too excited about anything that comes out of Auburn, to be honest with you. But I'm big time excited about one Jabari Smith Jr. I'm here to tell you right now. So, yes, that tells you, obviously, that we're going to talk a lot of the NBA draft that went down last Thursday. We're not going to just talk about the Houston Rockets, though. We're going to talk pretty in-depth as we can about other teams in the Southeast and the Southeast, I'm sorry, Southeast and the Southwest divisions. And we'll talk some other things NBA as well concerning both those divisions and some other things going on around the NBA that you know that I got to holler about, man. I definitely got to touch on a little bit as we go on in this show. But again, my name is Kerry Wood, and I'm just glad that you decided to join little old me on this little old show for a little while, and hope that I can keep you entertained and informed as we go forward. Please like, subscribe, do all those things wherever you're listening to the podcast. It doesn't matter if it's Apple, Spotify, Google, iHeartRadio, all of those in between, Audible, wherever you listen to your podcast, you can pretty much find Ball About the South with C. Wood. So, anyway, man, let's get into it. Before I get into the NBA, I'm going to get into the NBA in my next segment. My opening segment is pretty much going to be five things that kind of caught my eye, and it's been a while. As I go on and as I get back to doing this weekly, and it has been a while since I have since the last time I joined you here on Ball About the South, and I do apologize for that, but we're going to get back to this weekly thing. Especially, man, I'm sitting there looking at the calendar, and it is almost July. And you know what that means. In just a couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about SEC Media Days. That's going to be going down. And then for me, if you look at it, in my opinion, that is the start. For me, when the SEC has their Media Days, that is the start of the football season, the college football season and NFL, as far as I'm concerned, because not too long after that, all of the other conferences get together and do their thing. And then, of course, there toward the end of July, it's no more OTAs, it's no more mini camps. They get the camps going for real in the NFL as well. And so yeah, this is an exciting time, and we're going to get back on that weekly thing, and we'll talk a little bit about from all the teams in the SEC, the NFL, all of that as we go forward. I'm going to touch on a couple of things in the SEC in my last segment. We're going to talk a little, kind of talk about each of the teams that I think, you know, as we go forward, we'll take a couple teams each week, kind of break this thing down as we get ready for some football. But anyway, before I get into all of that, before I get into the NBA segment, we're going to get into the five things that kind of caught my eye here in the recent times. Yep, it is my starting five. It's going to be five topics or five stories that kind of caught my eye, like I said, in recent times. I can't just say last week, okay, because it's been about 3 weeks since I joined you last. So a couple of these might be a little bit old, but we're going to hit them up anyway. It is my starting five, and we're going to start off with Bill Clark, the head coach of the UAB Blazers. Well, unfortunately, it's the former head coach of the UAB Blazers. He's really shocked everyone here in the city of Birmingham and around Conference USA, and I would suppose the Blazers' new conference, the UAB Blazers I'm speaking of, as they get ready to go to the American Athletic Conference here in a couple seasons or whatever, I'm sure it sent shockwaves, because I'm sitting there and I got the notification on my phone of one of the local TV stations here was, I think it had the headline of UAB News Conference. And I didn't think of it. I thought it was probably something, something maybe COVID related, because UAB is a huge medical center here and all of that. And the school is obviously based on its medical school and everything. And I thought it was something maybe along those lines or something. And I look up and I see Bill Clark, and I was like, whoa. So, yeah, man, he's having to step down because of back issues. And, man, I tell you, that it's just one of those things. I really hated to see that one, man. And, Bill Clark has been extremely successful here at UAB. And not only that, you sit there and you look at the Blazers going to championship game. They've won two championships in Conference USA under Bill Clark. They've been to two other championship games in the conference and everything. They got the huge bowl win last season over BYU, which was, one of the biggest victories in UAB history, I would say. He has obviously the new stadium, the stadium that the USFL just played 10 weeks of a season in, is the stadium that was just built for UAB here. They just went and moved into it last fall. Everything. And then, of course, I just mentioned the fact that they were going to be going from Conference USA to the American. Everything was pointing up in the right direction for the UAB football program. And then this hits them. So it's really bad. And then but really the thing that I would say was even makes it even worse is the fact that Bill Clark is a guy that obviously he's been coaching here a good while. He was the head coach when the program was cut out, when they took away the football program, and he stayed despite having offers to go to other schools and being the head coach or whatever. He decided to stick it out, and that's some loyalty for you right there. And this is a really tough break. So in the interim, the UAB has decided to go with Bryant Vincent. He has been an assistant coach under Clark for the last six seasons. So he was UAB's offensive coordinator. So we'll see how that goes. But obviously keeping it in-house, at least for now, we'll see how he does coming up this season. But anyway, tough blow for UAB. So that's, one thing that really caught my eye here lately. I'm going to kind of stay in college football. What about the decision by one Arch Manning last week? Arch Manning decides it come down to, reportedly anyway, Alabama, Georgia, and Texas. So everybody, and I don't know if if Texas was really mentioned as much as Alabama and Georgia were. And this thing has been going on for a couple of years. If you're an Alabama fan, if you live here in the state of Alabama, if you're just an SEC fan at all, this thing has been crazy about Arch Manning for the last two or three seasons. I mean, really, since he got to whatever high school was at that he is. I don't even know where the dude goes to high school. I really don't, because, I mean, I'm like I said, I'm a huge Alabama fan, and obviously I keep my ear, I keep my eyes and my ears on everything SEC. But it just, I'm like, okay, he's going to make a decision one way or the other. If it's going to be Alabama, cool. If it's not, cool. I didn't see what all of the hype was about this guy signing, especially if he had signed with Alabama. If he had signed with Georgia, then obviously that would have sent shockwaves, man. You know, put down Alabama and decided to go to Georgia or whatever. You know, Georgia's won the national championship. Georgia just won the recruiting battles, at least this past season and everything. So, last season, not this past season, Texas A&M won. And, of course, we all know about the Nick Saban thing with Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. So, you know, this would that have been just a kind of another blow to this dynasty at Alabama? Obviously, I don't think that it would have been. I just don't think it's that big a deal. But obviously, when you sit there and you have Manning attached to your name, Manning is your last name, that kind of makes it a big deal. So he decides to not go the path of Archie Manning and Peyton Manning and Eli Manning and staying in the SEC. He decides to go to Texas, which is very interesting. Well, he's not in the SEC, at least for now, because if he's going to be there two or three seasons, he's going to eventually be in the SEC anyway, more than likely, if they get this thing off the road where Texas and Oklahoma get into the SEC. It's starting to look like it's going to be 2025, which, by the way, the teams from the American, Cincinnati, Memphis, Cincinnati, all those teams that are going to the Big 12, that is going down in the 2023 season, so which is going to be pretty interesting because it's a little bit quicker than I think. I put it like this. I thought 2023 would be the year that everything went down. I really thought that they would I knew there was a huge buyout or whatever with Oklahoma and Texas from the Big 12, but I thought that they'll figure out a way to take care of that. We'll see Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC in 2023, and we'll see Cincinnati and all those teams from the American into the Big 12 in 2023 as well. Didn't go down that way. But the American, Central Florida, all those teams, all those schools are headed to the Big 12 in 2023. And they will have one Arch Manning as the quarterback of the Texas Longhorns. That should be interesting. And what will really be interesting is if Arch Manning is the starting quarterback next season as Texas comes to Tuscaloosa for that return trip. You know that Alabama goes to Austin this year, and the Longhorns return that trip next season to Tuscaloosa. That should be very interesting. We'll stay with the SEC. Here in my starting five, what about the SEC baseball teams out there at the College World Series doing their thing? First of all, they had four of the eight. That had never been done. And then if you want to get technical about it, you had two others, the SEC, Texas and Oklahoma, which are going to be in the SEC. So if you want to sit there and look at it like that, you had six of the eight. And, of course, you know, you had Auburn, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, who actually won the whole thing. Congratulations to the Ole Miss Rebels for a job well done out there in the College World Series. You had those three teams, and you also had the Arkansas Razorbacks. So those four teams did their thing. Arkansas and Ole Miss, it came down to those two to fight it out in the championship round against Oklahoma. Ole Miss ended up winning that. Ole Miss then ended up taking out the Sooners and winning their first national championship. And there was a lot of history behind that victory. I mean, first of all, when you sit there and think about it, Mississippi State won the 2021 College World Series. So basically, the trophy is going to stay in the state of Mississippi. It's just going to go to the other side of the state now. So, man, you got to kind of feel for Mississippi State fans. I'm sitting there, you know, they talked. They've been talking mad smack all season long. You know that they have. Oh, y'all haven't won anything at Ole Miss. We have won our first national championship, and now they only get to really enjoy it for one season if Ole Miss comes and does the same thing the very next season. How about that? And then one other stat that I, you know, kind of browsed upon. So in the, I guess you call them the three major sports. You talk about college basketball, football, and baseball. Every team in the SEC has won at least one national title now. Ole Miss took care of that. Yes, and yes, even Vanderbilt has won a national title. They did it just a couple of seasons ago in the College World Series. In fact, this is the third consecutive SEC championship for the SEC in the College World Series, so which is remarkable, right? Okay, but there's one school that has not won a national championship in either one of those three sports since 1940. And that school, ironically enough, is none other than the Texas A&M Aggies. I saw that stat. I could not believe it. I just could not. I mean, 1940. I mean, I never would have dreamed anything like that. I mean, I know college football. I mean, as we've talked about how Texas A&M is ripe for being a team that could, you know, be a dynasty in the making or whatever. We've talked about that. There's no question about it. But let's be real about it. They really have not been that good. This is probably the best that they've been in college football in their existence these last several years in the SEC. And they've only been in the SEC since 2012. So, I mean, look, most of those years they were not in the SEC. I understand that. But still, that is a crazy stat to think about, that Texas A&M is the only one of the 14 current SEC schools that has not won a national championship in either of those sports. That's crazy. We'll stay with baseball with my number four of my starting five, the Atlanta Braves. They finally kind of kicked things into gear. I think they were about 8-9 games out behind the Mets the last time I joined you. Now, they had cut that lead a lot slimmer. I think right now the Braves are sitting about 5 games out. They had won 14, 15 games in a row there at one stretch and just completely flipped their season around. They've kind of cooled off a little bit since then. So they're still 5 games out, but they're right there. We barely hit the halfway point of the season, so we have not quite hit the All-Star break. That will be coming up in a couple of weeks. So things are looking up with the defending World Series champions. I didn't think that there was anything to worry about. I thought that they would kick it into gear. I think you sit there and you look at everything that the Braves have been through. First of all, I mean, you know, you come out this season without your, you know, I guess, in a way, you look at him as your number one star, and Ronald Acuna Jr. He's still coming back from the ACL injury. Then to make matters a little bit worse, you lose your cornerstone guy. You lose kind of your face of the franchise in Freddie Freeman. You trade him to the Dodgers. Now, I know that they received Olsen in return. He's definitely a capable first baseman. No question about that. He's not Freddie Freeman. He's not you make a move like that, you have to wonder what effect it can kind of have on your locker room. And then this is the team that just came off of winning the World Series. So for them to have a slow start to the season was not a surprise. It just wasn't. And they have kicked things into gear, and I think the Braves are going to be right there with the Mets for the long haul, and they're in the National League East. I think that is going to be a really good race to the end. That is my fourth of my starting five. Now I go to number five, and it'll lead into my NBA segment because number five is one Kyrie Irving. I mean, Kyrie Irving, man, I'm going to tell you. I mean, this whole thing, when we heard it was the Woj bomb or whatever, talking about, well, the Nets and Kyrie Irving, their talks had hit an impasse about him opting back in with his, you know, opting into that 37 or 36 point whatever million-dollar contract, his option for this season. I just thought it was much ado about nothing. For a number of reasons. I figured that he would find out. There's nothing wrong with him wanting to test the waters to see what's out there, throw that bait out there and see who bites or whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. But in the end, he knew the market was going to be thin for this guy. And then you sit there and you look at the teams that he, you know, had on his list. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. I thought maybe if, you know, Dallas would have kind of looked at things maybe a little bit crazy, in my opinion, because I just don't think Kyrie Irving and Luka would have been a good matchup. I don't think that would have been a good mix. But who am I? And that's just my opinion. But I don't think that Dallas would have made that move. Dallas probably would have been them or the Clippers would have been at least a team that the Nets could get a couple assets back from or whatever. I just didn't think it would be a good fit for either one of those teams. I mean, I just, you know, you sit there and you think about Kyrie Irving matched up with Luka. To me, that didn't make sense. And then you think about the Clippers with, I'm not really sure what this thing is going to look like when Kawhi gets back next season, because we saw evidence. We got receipts where this Clippers team played better with Paul George and without Kawhi Leonard. Now, I'm not saying that that's the rule. I'm not saying it's going to be that way this season or anything like that. I'm just saying we've seen that scenario, okay? So I'm not sure what to expect from the Clippers once we hit training camp and we get into October and tip this thing off for real. I'm just not sure what to expect. And why would you add Kyrie Irving to that? Didn't make much sense. And then you look at some of the other teams. Obviously, the Lakers stood out. And obviously, with the Lakers in the position that they're in, no assets, no draft picks, really no tradable pieces, it wasn't going to work, man. If you had gotten another team or two involved and made it a really huge blockbuster, 3 or 4 team deal or whatever, maybe you could have made it work. Because other than that, what did the Lakers have that the Nets would want? Anthony Davis and LeBron, but we know the Lakers aren't giving those guys up, right? I mean, that kind of defeats the purpose. So who else on that roster do the Lakers or did the Lakers have that would entice the Nets to make this move? I mean, it just didn't – it made no sense. And I felt like in the end, after Kyrie tests the waters, they sit there and they check it out or whatever, that he was going to end up signing back with the Brooklyn Nets, and that is exactly what happened. I mean, there's still a inkling of a chance that something could go down. I don't see it, man. And I think the Nets, they played it about as smart as they could, in my opinion, because they kind of forced, in my opinion, they kind of forced Kyrie's hand. Because they kind of put it out there and made it even more plain that the market just is not there. The way they handled it. Yeah, you know, the Nets were painted into a corner now. Don't get me wrong. They're up against the ropes because, obviously, if you sit there and Kyrie calls your bluff and he sits there and leaves and then leaves you with Kevin Durant by himself, then obviously the chances of you keeping Kevin Durant are pretty slim. But they came out like a G the other day and was like, look, hey, if we got to lose KD and Kyrie, so be it. And I could not do anything but applaud that stance by the Brooklyn Nets. I could not. I mean, obviously, it would not be a good move to sit there and invest in these two guys, especially in Kevin Durant like that, and lose him for nothing, basically. You know, obviously, I take that back. Obviously, they could have gotten a pretty good haul for Kevin Durant. But even Kevin Durant, as good as this dude is 33 years old, man. What would they have gotten in return? I don't know. So, you know, man, look, this whole thing, it was never going to go down. That was the only ending to this saga, this soap opera. Kyrie Irving opting back in to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. That was all that was ever going to happen. And we'll see how it works out, man. Again, I'm not big. I've never been big on this matchup, this tandem with Durant and Kyrie Irving. I didn't think it would turn into this. I thought we'd be looking at a much more competitive Brooklyn Nets squad. I thought that would be it, and I just thought they would probably kind of come up short. I didn't see this coming, not exactly to this extent. But then again, I'm not surprised because of what we saw in Boston. I don't know, man. Crazy. So we'll talk maybe a little bit more about this whole thing as this Kyrie thing kind of ties into some, you know, other things going on in the NBA as well. Because I tell you what, if Kyrie had left and then Brooklyn was unable to keep Kevin Durant, the beneficiary of that situation would have been my Houston Rockets. I was sitting there pulling for it. Let's go. Come on, Kyrie. Let's go to the Lakers. And, you know, if Kevin Durant wants to join, that's all well and good, because we're going to sit there and leave a Brooklyn Nets team that's going to be finishing toward the bottom of the standings more than likely, or maybe just barely making the playoffs. And that is going to help the Rockets, because we own every one of their draft picks, it seems like, until 2027. So anyway, it didn't work out that way. It worked out pretty much the way I thought it would. Kyrie signing back with the Nets. Before I do go to break and get into my NBA, really get deep into my NBA segment, my congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche. They defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I did not see game 6, unfortunately. Man, I had some things going on. I enjoyed the Stanley Cup playoffs. I enjoyed the Stanley Cup finals. If you did not check them out, you kind of missed a treat. I'm just going to be real with you. Really good hockey, I thought. And the sport is, I think, in good hands. I think they made an excellent move in kind of moving the playoffs back a little bit. I really haven't looked at the TV ratings or anything, but it definitely, at least from my standpoint, it gave me an opportunity to watch a lot more hockey than I had been watching in the last several years. And I was happy to watch it. It was definitely fun. And, again, my congrats to your 2022 Stanley Cup champion, Colorado Avalanche. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, man. When we come back, we're going to get into a little bit deeper into the NBA. We're going to talk some NBA draft. We're going to talk some of these teams down in my neck of the woods. I'm talking about the Hawks. Big time trade talks going on with the Hawks. What's all that about? We're going to get into that. We'll get into some of these draft picks and the outlook for some of these teams when we get ready for free agency at the end of this week when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back. Ball About the South. This episode continues, and we're going to get into some more NBA as I get into my NBA segment. We finished off that first segment talking about Kyrie Irving, and one thing I'd like to add is the fact that, you know, he gave out his list of teams that he would consider going to or whatever. He had the Philadelphia 76ers on his list. Now, I mean, I've been trying to figure that one out ever since the news broke on that one. I mean, does he not know that James Harden is there? Does he not know that James Harden left Brooklyn because of him? That relationship, I think there were questions about that relationship even without, you know, what happened with COVID and Kyrie deciding not to, you know, get vaccinated and all that good stuff. I think there were other issues going on between those two. But I don't know. That's just the kind of thing that Kyrie has kind of been doing here as of late. I just think he's just kind of throwing stuff out there, to be honest with you, to a degree, man. And, you know, just could not have been serious about moving on to Philadelphia. And if you're Philadelphia, I mean, would you take on Kyrie Irving knowing what happened in Brooklyn? It made no sense. It made no sense at all. So, yeah, I tell you, if that had gone down, if Kyrie had gone to Philadelphia, I'm telling you right now, man, I would have been down. Even if anybody wanted to make, get a group together to go and actually physically free Joel Embiid, because I think it's about that at that point already that I don't think this James Harden and Joel Embiid thing is gonna work. I know that if they get their heads put on together, they get everything straight, they could be a really dynamic duo. There's no question about it. And then you sit there and you add the likes of Tyrese Maxey, and then they still have Tobias Harris and a few other pieces there on that basketball team. And they sat there and added De'Anthony Melton, a guard from Memphis, here in a trade on draft night. Don't get me wrong. It's a nice basketball team. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I just don't see it working. I'm telling you, I just hate to see it for Joel Embiid, because this is supposed to be his team. I don't think he fully signed off on bringing James Harden into the fold. Maybe he did, but I don't think he, even if he did, I don't think he's necessarily feeling that way now. We'll see how things go coming out of training camp and going into next season. Maybe James Harden will come back. And maybe he'll come back in shape with the right attitude and right mindset and everything. But right now, I just would not trust it. I'm telling you, I just would not trust it. And Kyrie Irving would have added fuel to that distrust, or not being able to trust them or whatever. I just thought it was comical that he threw them on his list, man. I just could not believe that. Anyway, before I really get into the NBA draft, what we saw last week there at the NBA draft, and then talk about some things here going forward as we get into free agency and all that good stuff, I want to go back just for a couple minutes and talk about the NBA Finals, the Golden State Warriors doing their thing and winning their fourth title in the last 8 years, their seventh overall. In doing so, they surpassed the sixth that Chicago Bulls have, which is obviously a great feat. It really is. I was really unaware until, I guess, when this run kind of started off in 2015 and in that range or whatever, that Golden State had won two other titles. I knew they had one back in the 70s. I knew that, but I didn't know that they had two others before that. So they have put themselves in really good company. There's no question about it as a franchise. And right now, Man, for you know, I think you'd have to say from what we're seeing, what we saw last week or couple weeks ago now, and throughout the playoffs, that this team is going to be something to deal with for a good while. I don't think this is anything that's going to die off anytime soon. I think you look at this matchup we had against the Boston Celtics. My thinking going into the NBA Finals was that Golden State was probably the better team. No question that they were the more experienced team. They had been in this spot before, obviously more than Boston, even though the Celtics have been to a few Eastern Conference Finals and everything as of late. Golden State was the more seasoned ball club. I thought what would happen, and it really, to me, really, the series went just about like I expected it to. I thought Boston's size and their athletic ability on the interior with guys like Jaylen Brown and all those dudes, I thought, and Robert Williams, who had had a pretty good series as well. I really thought that would kind of bother Golden State early in the series. And it did. It really did, of course, in game one. And then for a little while there in game three as well before, not for a little while because Boston, you know, went in game three. I'd even say a little bit of game four until Golden State kind of figured things out. And that's kind of what I thought would happen. I thought Golden State would lose a couple games, maybe even three in this series, and it would go the distance. But as the series wore on, I thought that they would, get their feet under them, figure things out. And then I thought they being the more seasoned team, team that, I think the talent level of both teams, maybe I think you could probably make a case that Boston may be a little more talented than Golden State. But I just thought that, Celtics not being on that stage would hurt them as the series went on. And that, I think that is exactly what happened. They started, having a lot of turnovers there in the last few games of the series. Jason Tatum, I will say this. I think that people need to kind of lay off Jason Tatum. I'm just going to be real about it. Again, we're talking about a guy that's 24 years old right now. In his first rodeo, this is his first time being on this bigger stage. And he looked like it. I mean, so did Jaylen Brown to a certain degree at times. And, so did Marcus Smart. And so did, the list can go on and on when you talk about Boston because they have not been on that stage. And, when you have a team like Golden State that knows how to do the things, they know how to play the game, they're not relying on one guy to do the whole thing. They're not relying on one guy to score 40 or 50 points a night, kind of like Miami was having to do with Jimmy Butler. I mean, if Steph proved it last season, he could score 40 a game if you need him to. Now, as he gets older, obviously that that gets a little bit more difficult. But he proved he can do it in increments of time. He proved that he could do it. But Golden State has never been built that way. They've never been built that way. And, you had games in this series where you had a couple games where Klay was really good. You had one game where Steph, I think, what was that, game five, Steph did not hit a three. This was after he went off in game four, had the 43-point outburst there at Boston and basically put the Warriors on his back and carried them to a victory. Game five, he comes out, doesn't even make a three-pointer. But Golden State found a way to win that ball game. And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. There are so many teams in the league that if their main guy, their number one go-to guy, did not make a three, had off game, not only would they have lost the game, they probably would have gotten blown out. But not Golden State. That is the difference between what the Golden State Warriors are doing and pretty much everyone else is doing to a degree. I'm not going to say everyone else because I think you have teams like Milwaukee. Now, that would have been the series to see. I would love to have seen if Golden State could have hung with Milwaukee. Yeah, Miami, that, you know, I just think they just have a lack of scoring. I think they have a system where they're not dependent. They're dependent on Jimmy Butler because they just really don't have enough, a lot of other go-to guys. But I think their system makes it for where they can, you know, if they had other guys, you know, if Jimmy Butler had an off night, then this guy can pick you up or that guy can pick you up. I think the system is there. I think maybe they need to make a few tweaks to the roster. But Golden State is just different, man. They're just different, and they're able to absorb a bad shooting night by Steph Curry and still win the game because they have guys like Andrew Wiggins. They have, who had, you know, an MVP-worthy series, to be honest. But, I mean, let's be real. After Steph dropped that 43-point game on Boston, in Boston, and carried them to the victory, if Golden State was going to win the series, he cemented the MVP with that right there. There's just no question about it. So, but, you know, Golden State had Andrew Wiggins. They had good games from Klay Thompson. They had a good game from Poole. They had contributions from guys, you know, just up and down their lineup. Draymond Green had big games. I mean, not scoring-wise necessarily, but and they actually had one game he scored pretty good, you know. But he also had games where he, you know, his defense or his passing – everything just fits, and that's the way you want your team to look. And that should be the goal. If you're sitting there, you know, you've got draft picks, where you made draft picks last week, and now you're trying to fit those draft picks into your system, and now you're looking at free agents, possibly if you have the cash to throw around or whatever. That's what you want, man. You want to be able to get those players to mesh, and you want to have a system where they don't have to sit there and have one dude do it every night. That's what you want. And I think that this was the best illustration that we possibly could have had of that, what Golden State did in this playoff. Because, and look, I picked Phoenix. I thought Phoenix would win the West. I thought, in my opinion, and I think if you sit there and you really look at it, I think Golden State, in my opinion, is a year ahead of schedule. Because I think, for my thing, I was like, okay, you know, you got a lot of people on Twitter and everything. So I just don't know why people hate on Golden State. My thing wasn't hate on Golden State. My thing was, I didn't think Golden State would be ready this season without a guy that could man the interior, because they never did get Wiseman back. They, you know, obviously they don't really have any other really big time interior guys that protect the rim or whatever. Okay, so they didn't have him. And then also I looked at it as like, man, I mean, Klay is not quite the Klay that we were accustomed to, and I think he's getting close to being that, but he still had a little bit of ways to go. So I'm like, I think Golden State gets to the Western Conference Finals. They lose to Phoenix. And then next year, look out. That was my thinking on Golden State. That's why this thing is just, it is extremely scary what we have, what we're looking at with Golden State. And I basically knew, I knew when they made that deal for Andrew Wiggins, the thing was going to work out for him. And I knew Andrew Wiggins would be a hit for Golden State, and I knew that would be the first piece of them getting themselves back to where they wanted to be. And that has come to fruition big time. So, again, man, look, I don't know what else to say, but that is a scary, that is scary what we're looking at in San Francisco, California. When you sit there and you think about Curry, though, you know, Klay is going to continue to kind of, I think, get himself more acclimated. And now they're going to have other guys that are going to make it where, though, as they get older, as Steph and Klay get older, and Draymond too, as they get older, they're not going to have to do as much because they're going to have other guys that can kind of handle things for them. You know, I mean, so it's a scary thing brewing in San Francisco. And I think they're going to the next season. They're going to be the odds-on favorite, no question, to win another NBA championship. So, but again, kudos to them, but also kudos to the Boston Celtics. I mean, there is no reason to sit there and get down on anything that happened in the NBA Finals connected with the Boston Celtics. That's Jason Tatum. That's, the fact that they lost. None of that should be a negative, in my opinion, when you talk about the Boston Celtics. I think they'll be right back with another chance to get right back there next season. So anyway, those are my thoughts on the NBA Finals as we kind of close that book on the 2021-22 season. Now let's move ahead, man. Let's talk about what we had go down on draft night last week, last Thursday night. And I kind of teased it earlier in the show as I opened. And as you see, I've got the Houston Rockets. That's my boys on the cover of this this particular episode. I'm going to start out with them just really quick, but I'm going to kind of touch on some of the highlights, especially for the teams here in my neck of the woods down here in the South, Southeast, Southwest Division teams especially. The Houston Rockets, again, adding Jabari Smith, man, that was huge for me. Obviously, going into the last few weeks of talk before the draft, it seemed like Paolo Banchero would be the pick for the Rockets. He would go third. The prognosticators, the experts, they had Jabari Smith Jr. going first to Orlando, and then, of course, Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga going to Oklahoma City. Well, all of that got switched around. And it kind of word about it was broken by Woj, I said a couple hours before the draft, that Orlando was going to take Banchero. Now, here are my thoughts on that. I had pretty much warmed up to the idea of Banchero being our choice at number three. I was fine with that because I'm going to be real with you back December because obviously me being huge on the SEC and watching a lot of SEC hoops, I got to watch a lot of Jabari Smith, obviously. So I don't think it was really any kind of bias or anything toward the SEC. I just really liked Jabari Smith, and I was like, look, I want this dude to be a Houston Rocket, okay? So that's how I was from, I'd say, December on through the end of the college basketball season and up to, us really getting ready for the draft. But, the talk began that Houston would probably get Banchero. I said, okay, well, you know what? I'd rather have Smith, but I'm fine with that because I really do think any of these three guys, all three of these guys could have been the number one pick. I mean, that's how strong this draft is. I think this is a really deep draft. And I had warmed up to Banchero being our choice. I was like, okay, so be it. That's cool. But I really wanted Jabari Smith from the jump. So I'm happy for us to get him. And we made it an SEC thing all night. We go out, we get, obviously we had the 17th pick. We used that pick for Tari Eason out of LSU. Then we, as part of the Christian Wood trade, which I have not talked about, but I'm going to talk about really quick here. We traded Christian Wood to the Dallas Mavericks. We obtained the 26th pick from Dallas at that point. Now, Christian Wood, man, don't get me wrong. This dude, I really liked him. Obviously, everybody's calling him C. Wood, and my name's C. Wood. So, obviously, we had a connection there, this, right? But, and, of course, him playing for my favorite team and everything. But truth be told, I just don't think the fit was right for Houston. And I know I had that conversation with several people on social media last year. I said, well, I don't understand why the Rockets are trying to trade Christian Wood. I mean, what is up with that? And I told them, I was like, look, it's just fit right now. I think that, you look at Christian Wood, man, I think this dude, him being 25, 26 years old or whatever right now, I think we're looking at him wanting to be the main man on his own team or whatever. Okay, well, the Rockets drafted Jalen Green last year. They drafted Jalen Green to be kind of, even though he's not necessarily that right now, they drafted him to be that guy of the future, not Christian Wood. And they made that trade for Christian Wood to pair him with James Harden. That was what that trade was about. So obviously James Harden is not there anymore, so things changed. Things changed. So Christian Wood, in my opinion, became expendable. And so I liked the move. I liked being able to get back into another pick in the first round. I was hopeful that the Rockets could have used both of those later picks in the first round, maybe moving up and maybe grabbing a spot a little bit higher in the first round or whatever. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. So they actually traded that pick out. They traded the number 26 pick. But then they were able to get back into the draft with a trade and got the 29th pick. And with that pick, they were able to get Ty Washington Jr. out of Kentucky. Again, continuing with the SEC theme here. So, and look, Ty Washington, for me, is a really good ball player. I think you sit there and you look at these Kentucky guys, 90% of them, man, you sit there and think about it. From, you know, back here with Calipari and everything, there have been some players that may not have played a whole lot, or maybe they didn't get as much press as some of the other ones, some of the other big-time players that have come through there, like John Wall and Anthony Davis and all of those guys. Maybe they didn't quite get the press that those guys got, but you look up and a lot of those guys have hit. Big time. De'Aaron Fox is one that comes to mind. I think you're seeing a guy like Emmanuel Quickley doing pretty well with the Knicks, and so on and so on. There are a lot more examples I could think of, but I think Ty Washington coming in really completes a really good draft for the Houston Rockets. I just really do, and I think Tari Eason, the guy that got out of LSU, he is a guy that I think would be a 3-and-D type guy. He can shoot the three pretty well. Very athletic. He can get out there and defend multiple positions. And then, of course, Jabari Smith. I don't think I need to tell you a whole lot about him. This dude is smooth in what he does. The first thing I said when I saw him anyway was, this dude think he's Kevin Durant. I'm not saying he's going to be that. But that is the comparison that a lot of people have for one Jabari Smith. So, look, I'm excited big time for this draft and for the future of my Houston Rockets, man. I'm just hoping that we can get everything situated. And now you sit there and look up beyond our draft night. We were finally able to buy out John Wall. He is now headed to the L.A. Clippers. How about that? That is going to be crazy. The Clippers are one deep, deep basketball team. We're going to talk a lot more about them as we go forward. But, the fact of the matter is the Rockets were finally able to do him right. They're not like they didn't do him right in the first place. I mean, I'm hearing all these people talking about, oh, man, how y'all not going to play him? Well, I mean, we paid him $40 million not to play. Really? So I'm not understanding how that's not doing him right. We as an organization have our agenda as well. It's not, I mean, don't get me wrong. And John Wall was as professional as you can be throughout the entire situation. There's no question about that. Kudos to him. But at the same time, dude, I mean, the Rockets this is a business. We have what we're trying to do. And if, you know, John Wall comes out playing 30 minutes a night or whatever, that is taking away time for our young guys to grow, because that is what this is about right now. This is about those guys getting acclimated and doing the things they need to do to make us a better franchise in the future. So anyway, so you look at some of the other teams. In my neck of the woods down here in the South, man, the one team that I tell you that But two teams that kind of really jump off the page right now are the Atlanta Hawks in the Southeast Division and the Southwestern Division, San Antonio Spurs. Now, there are trade talks going on between both of these teams right now, and it's seeming like, from what I'm hearing, that it's almost a done deal. DeJounte Murray, the guard from San Antonio, this is a guy that has really, I think, blossomed in the last couple seasons. I think he has really improved his game ever since he's been in the league. I think he's been in the league 4 years now. The rumor is that he is going to be an Atlanta Hawk. Well, at least it's a very, very good possibility that he's going to be a Hawk. And they'll pair him up, obviously, with Trae Young. Now, I don't know about that move, man. I really don't know about the move from San Antonio's standpoint. Then again, I sat there and I looked and saw what San Antonio wants in return. They're looking for four first-round picks, you know, I guess scattered out or whatever. Or they're looking for three first-round picks and maybe a veteran or something like that from the Hawks. And I'm just sitting there like, I mean, I like DeJounte Murray. I don't know if dude's worth four first-round picks. I mean, I just don't. I mean, if I'm the Hawks, I'm not giving up four first-round picks for DeJounte Murray. I mean, that's just me. Let me know if I'm wrong about that in the comments section or on Twitter or whatever. You know, and in the end, I'm sitting there thinking about it from San Antonio's standpoint. I mean, it's not like DeJounte Murray. This, like I said, this guy's in his fourth season. I think he's like 24, 25 years old. I mean, so the Spurs are ready to just completely blow it all the way up and start completely fresh, which is kind of interesting to me. It just really is, because I think there are a lot of question marks about the Spurs franchise right now, and part of it starts at the top with head coach Greg Popovich. I mean, how long is this dude going to how much longer is this dude going to coach? And you're talking about sitting here trying to set up future draft picks for really the best piece that you have right now. I mean, don't get me wrong. They have some other guys that I like on that basketball team. You know, don't get me wrong. I think they have some other young guys that they, you know, that I think they've done pretty well drafting and everything. But, man, it's a lot for DeJounte Murray. And, you know, again, I'm just really kind of throwing me on all of this is you're sitting there looking at some of these moves that are already being discussed, and free agency doesn't start until, it's not supposed to start until Thursday. Another move that has gone down that does not involve, half the trade involves the South team is the Dallas Mavericks. They're going to lose Jalen Brunson to the New York Knicks. And apparently it's just going to be where they're just going to lose. This is Jalen Brunson's contract year, so they're not going to get anything in return for him. But here's the deal, man. If you're the Knicks, I mean, if you're a Knicks fan, are you feeling good about that one? I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Jalen Brunson. I definitely like his game. If I'm Dallas, I would be trying to possibly keep him unless I have something else in mind for him. Because I think this guy really complements Luka Doncic really well if they use him correctly. I just don't think they use him correctly, in my opinion. I don't think, you know, you sit there and you look at Luka, this is a guy that's constantly got the ball in his hands. And I, you know, just heard it all the time. Like, man, I just don't, oh my goodness, why is Spencer Dinwiddie and Brunson, why are they, they're 2 for 13 in this game or whatever, or they're 3 for 14 and they're not scoring the ball well, or they're 2-for-10 or whatever the case is, and we're talking about it being toward the end of the game, and I'm sitting there like, sometimes obviously it's not as many shots that I, you know, it may not be 12 or double digit shots for those guys, 13, 14 shots, because Luka Doncic is, again, I'm not saying Luka's a ball hog, but this guy's constantly got the ball in his hands, and he's going to shoot a lot more times than anybody else, which that's fine. But if you're sitting there with one guy being your offense and he's got the ball in his hands all the time, and these guys are not touching it, or when they do get the touch of this at the end of the shot clock or whatever, how in the world are they ever going to get in a rhythm? So that is why when they play Utah, you sit there and look up, and Brunson's got 30 points, and Brunson's got 35, and Dinwiddie's got 30. And they're like, well, man, where was this all the rest of the season? Well, I'll tell you where it was. It was inside the hands of Luka Doncic. Again, I'm not trying to come down on Luka Doncic, but my point is that I think that these guys can absolutely score when they touch the ball and they have the opportunity. But now I think when you sit there and you talk about a Jalen Brunson being your number one guy, which the Knicks are talking about paying this dude $25 million, 4 years, $110 million. Obviously, you're asking him to be their number one guy. And that is not what Jalen Brunson is. It just isn't. So, again, the Knicks are nicking again. They're doing nickish things as they usually do. So that is crazy. It's crazy that we even know that that's going down, like I said, and free agency has not begun yet. Then you sit there, you look at Bradley Beal. He's staying with the Washington Wizards, at least for now. I think I would not be surprised if that there's a trade that goes down for him somewhere in the middle of the season or whatever. Again, that's a very interesting situation that Beal is willing to stay there for right now. I applaud it, but wow. Wow. I think that is the thought right now. It's still a possibility he could opt out of his contract. It's still a possibility. So we'll see how that goes. You sit there and you look at some of the other teams around here, man. Again, we had Orlando Magic. They made a couple of deals here and there. Is Paolo Banchero the guy that can bring them back to respectability? I think he is. I think Banchero is a guy that's probably this. You know, a lot of people think he's the most ready of these top picks to do it from day one. But he may not quite have the upside as guys like Holmgren and Smith do. We'll have to see how that plays out. I think it's a good pick for Orlando. But, again, Orlando, man, I don't know. Some of the things that you sit there and look at that they do makes you shake your head. And then they come up with one earlier today when they release Mo Bamba. Okay, and Mo Bamba just had the best season of his career. This guy's only 24 years old. He just had his best season of his career. He's a guy that protects the rim really well, 7 foot. He can go it out, shoot the three ball, and all of that. Has his best season, and Orlando says, "Nah, we're going to go another direction." I guess they weren't impressed. And word is out that they are interested in Isaiah Hartenstein, the big man, the former Houston Rocket, and the guy that lately played with the L.A. Clippers. So we'll see how that goes. If it's come down to Mo Bamba and Isaiah Hartenstein, I like Isaiah Hartenstein, but I'm picking Mo Bamba every day of the week. Well, anyway, that's just me. You look at the New Orleans Pelicans, and we continue with some of the Southwest Division teams. They had one pick in the draft. I thought they might try to trade out of that pick. They end up getting Dyson Daniels with the 8th pick. You know, everything that I've heard about this guy is more of him being more of a guy that a better on the defensive end. So I'm not really sure about how that pick is going to play out. We'll see. So, yeah, look, not a lot going on as far as in the draft with some of these teams because, you know, you sit there and you look at the Hawks, you look at the Pelicans, those teams are trying to get pieces where they can win now. The Dallas Mavericks, same thing. Charlotte Hornets, I think, are a very interesting team. They did pick up Mark Williams from Duke, the big guy. That was obviously their biggest need. They needed rim protection, and they got it from Mark Williams from Duke, and he just stays there in the state of North Carolina. So I think that is a good fit for them. We'll have to see what happens with them and Miles Bridges, though. I'm not sure that the Hornets are going to be able to keep him. There's going to be a lot of teams, I think, lined up for Miles Bridges' services here in free agency. I really do believe that. Looking at some of the other teams, that some of the other things that really caught my eye during the draft, one of them was the Detroit Pistons. You have to like the draft, and not just the draft. You have to like everything leading up to the draft. They made the trade to get a couple more picks from Portland. They traded away Jeremy Grant. As he goes to Portland, team up with Dame Lillard. And again, the Pistons did it in the draft, though. They had Jaden Ivey fall to them at 5. Jaden Ivey's the guard. A lot of people compare to John Morant. They had him fall to 5, the guy out of Purdue. I really like his game. I think maybe he needs to improve his jumper a little bit. But other than that, I think, what could be a potential Cunningham and Jaden Ivey backcourt there in Detroit. That's the first thing. And then they add Jalen Duren. They had a couple of other trades on draft night, so they add Jalen Duren, the big guy, a big athletic center from Memphis. Man, that is a huge pick in my opinion. Jalen Duren, a lot of people, and you can see it as you watch this guy play, they definitely compare him to Bam Adebayo. So if you can get a guy like that, really and really not give up a whole lot to get him, and then you add Jaden Ivey who can help your backcourt. I think you gave up some salary cap room in giving up Jeremy Grant. And so now they had salary cap room anyway, and they have even more now with that move. The Detroit Pistons, man, I'm telling you, they could really make some moves. And who knows? I mean, with these moves, they could be a fringe playoff team with the moves that they're making. They're obviously, this is a very young team, so I don't want to jump too far ahead. But they were very competitive even last season. And you don't have to, it's not like you got to jump up and win 45, 50 games to get into play-in range. I mean, you get around 35 wins, maybe a little bit more than that, 38, somewhere in that range. You'll be right in the mix. Again, I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but it would not shock me with the moves that they made. I think they probably just missed the play-in range, probably, just going on what we know right now. But they have salary cap room where they can make a couple more moves. And they, to me, won the NBA draft and, kind of the days following it. We'll see what they come up with in free agency. So, man, yeah, it was a really good draft. Looking at some of the SEC players really quick, J.D. Davidson was able to go into the draft. He picked by Boston with the 53rd pick in the second round. He had guys in the second round like Kennedy Chandler from Tennessee, Jalen Williams from Arkansas. Also went there in the second round. I pretty much named everyone in the first round. You had Jabari Smith from Auburn. You had Charlie Easton from LSU. You had Ty Washington from Kentucky. You had Shaedon Sharpe from Kentucky. He goes to Portland, and I'm hearing that Dame Lillard. We really wanted Portland to draft him, and they ended up getting him. The guy out of Kentucky, he did not play at all last season, but I'm hearing a lot of the prognosticators saying when they went to cover Kentucky, they would be going to cover the current team, but their focus was taken away by Shaedon Sharpe. He ended up being the guy that was most talked about in a lot of situations. So I think that was a really good pick at number 7 for Portland. I think he's going to be a really good ball player. I really do. And then later in the first round, you had Walker Kessler, who was picked by the Grizzlies, but he was traded to Minnesota. And now the Grizzlies, I do need to talk about really quickly. They made a couple of moves. Again, I talked quickly about De'Anthony Melton moving on to Philadelphia. Philadelphia traded them the 23rd pick in exchange, and they picked up David Roddy out of Colorado State with that pick, and then they also had another pick, a guy named Jake LaRavia from Wake Forest. Now, I do know a little bit about David Roddy from Colorado State. I did get to see him a little bit. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I don't know a lot about Jake LaRavia. But I think what you're seeing Memphis doing with those two picks is they're trying to shed salary. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of Memphis fans would love to have seen them keep De'Anthony Melton. But I think the goal here is to make sure that they don't get into a situation where they can't afford to keep Ja Morant and those other guys that they have to pay here coming up soon. So, yeah, I mean, anyway, man, I thought it was a good draft. I think this is a really deep draft. I think there's a lot of good talent in this draft. And we'll see how they stack up against some of the other really good NBA drafts of past. And of the past. And again, I really think that a lot of teams are going to be happy with the players that they've received. Anyway, man, we're going to take a break. I'm going to talk a little bit about the USFL. We'll get into just a little bit of football on the other side when Ball About the South continues. All right, we're back. Final segment of this edition of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Glad you're joining me at whatever time you're listening to it. And I hope that you will definitely come back. Like, subscribe, do all those things. And make Ball About the South a part of your regular rotation of listening to podcasts or whatever. I want to talk about something real quick. Imani Bates, I'm just seeing the news kind of come down on Twitter and everything. Imani Bates, there was questions of whether or not he would be back with Memphis and everything. He had put his name into the transfer portal and all of that. He's going to Eastern Michigan. Not Michigan. Nope, not the University of Michigan Wolverines. Not Michigan State. Not Michigan State University Spartans. Not Sparty. Nope. He's going to Eastern Michigan. Not the Big Ten. He's going to the MAC. Look, no offense to anyone. If anyone is listening that is from Eastern Michigan or anything like that, but wow. I mean, wow. I know that this dude left a lot to be desired with this game this past season. Don't get me wrong. I get it. But wow. I'm just floored by this as I see it come across, man. And I guarantee you, this is going to be Penny's fault in the eyes of a lot of people. A lot of people, first of all, didn't think Penny should have recruited some of these players that he had come to Memphis. And I'm sure Imani Bates was probably one of them. And now, then it got to be where, I don't think Penny can coach these guys. Then, they had the rough start to the season, and then some kind of way they They ended up in the Sweet 16. So, yeah. The guy that couldn't coach him got him to the Sweet 16. So, I'm not putting this on Penny Hardaway, but I guarantee you a lot of people are going to do just that. And this is crazy. Monty Bates is headed to Eastern Michigan from the University of Memphis. Wow, that is crazy. But anyway, I'm going to get into the USFL just really quick, man. We'll talk a little bit of football as we close this show out. I know it's obviously an NBA-heavy show, but and we're going to do some more NBA with my next episode as we get deeper into free agency and everything. And we may even talk about a few more of the draft picks and all of that, and talk about some summer league as we get ready for that here in a couple of weeks. But, well, in about a week, actually. But the USFL, man, just had the playoffs this past weekend, and the Birmingham Stallions and the Philadelphia Stars both prevailed, and they will be a part of the inaugural USFL championship game coming up Saturday. The Stars, let's talk about them really quick before I get to my hometown dudes. The Stars pretty much did what I kind of thought that they would. In the last few weeks, man, I really have really been big on the Stars and their quarterback, Case Kukoc. Kukoc is, I thought, have really come on strong as their quarterback and may be the best quarterback in the league. Now, they're not putting up no big numbers. None of the teams really put up any big numbers. Now, there was that one game where Philadelphia scored 48. I think that was on Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago. I think that was in week 9, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was week 8 because it was played at Legion Field. I remember that game. And so they have put up a couple games where they put up some big numbers. Maybe it was Michigan, actually, now that I think about it. I'm not sure, but I know that was by far the most points scored in the league this season. Now, some of that was turnovers and things like that. So they have had a couple games where they put up some points and everything, but for the most part, this team has done it with defense just like everyone else in the league has, because the offenses have struggled to keep up. Because of, look, they just didn't have enough time to get together. And obviously, when you have a situation like that, the defenses are going to shine. That's just the way it is. So, but New Jersey coming into the game, the Generals, they come into the game 9-1. And everybody, I think, pretty much thought that they would win the game. I mean, they had, you look up, they've got the coach of the year in Riley. They had the MVP in Turpin. And Kevontae Turpin, and they had all these dudes, man. They swept the awards basically in the league, and then they just came out and just laid a big time egg against Philadelphia, and they lost that football game there in Canton at the Hall of Fame. A lot of people are looking at that game as an upset. I just didn't see it that way. I thought Philadelphia would win that game, and it came true, man. They did it. And now they're getting ready for the championship game, and they will face the Birmingham Stallions, who I questioned it, man. You know, they had to play the Breakers. They beat the New Orleans Breakers both times in the regular season. You know how hard it is, or at least that's the kind of the cliche, that it's hard for a team to beat another team three times. But the Stallions went out and they did it, winning that game 31-17 over the New Orleans Breakers. And man, Jamar Smith, quarterback, he's had his issues just like every other USFL quarterback has had. There's no question about that, but he did his thing the other day. 17 of 27, 190 yards passing. It took him on a couple late drives, especially that last drive of the game where they just basically took off about 6-7 minutes of the clock and salted the game away and did not give New Orleans a chance to make a comeback at all. Defense played well. They had a couple turnovers. They had the pick six. You had Victor Bolden take the kickoff return back all the way in the first half. You had a little bit of everything from Birmingham in this football game, and that's kind of the way it's been all season. They've just not had to rely on the offense. They have done it with special teams. They've done it with defense. And this game against New Orleans was no different. And I'm telling you, man, the New Orleans Breakers basically came in as the favorites. At least I thought they might be the favorites in the USFL overall. And the Stallions handled them. And I'm just proud of my hometown team. They get it done. So now you get ready to go up against the Stars. I think it's going to be a tough, tough game. I think this is going to be a really close battle. More than likely, it's going to be low scoring. I think the first team, probably the 20, will win this game. Hopefully, it'll be the Stallions. You know, you got the battle of the teams that wear red and gold. Of course, now actually Philadelphia is more like yellow, and everybody, you know, say they, you know, they sit there and think about ketchup and mustard when they see them play. Not really sure, man. I'm going to stick with my Stallions, though, man. I'm going to stick with my boys. I've stuck with them just about every week this season. I've picked them to win, and they have done so. They only had the one loss there. That game was to Houston. So, hey, look here, man. I'm just I'm excited for it, man. I just really am. And I think the most exciting news, despite there being a championship game coming up this weekend for the USFL, the most exciting news of the week for the USFL is that there is going to be a week two. A season two. And a lot of people question that. But, yes, there is going to be a season two. And the word is that Fox and NBC, they are saying they had a profitable first season, which means, you know, look, the ads on TV and all of that, they made some money. And that's that is the biggest deal of what they wanted to happen. That is exactly the way they wanted to do it. And I'm just happy to see that they're going to be back for season two. I never doubted that they would be because, again, I think the thing was that NBC had said, look, we are pledging $350 million for three seasons. Oh, I'm sorry, $150 million for three seasons. So you knew that. And then the way they did it this season with the hub being here in Birmingham, all eight teams playing all games except for the playoff games, that is, playing all games here in Birmingham. So travel costs were obviously nothing. And then, you know, basically the league only had to pay for the lodging of the players and things of that nature because the city of Birmingham pretty much gave the use of the stadium. So, man, I mean, you know, it's just, I think it's been a win-win for everyone involved. And now we'll see how it goes. The XFL is supposed to get going in 2023 as well. We should have two spring football leagues next season. That is going to be very interesting to see how that works out. And word is also that the USFL is kind of not going to go to just one hub city next year. It's going to be at least two and possibly four. So we'll see how all that goes as well. But, again, I think it's exciting that the USFL is going to be back for another season. And I think that is a really good thing. And I tell you what, as I get ready to close this thing out, I'm looking at Twitter right now, and we've got a done deal apparently with DeJounte Murray going to the Atlanta Hawks. And according to Sham Sharania and Adrian Wojnarowski, they've come with a Woj bomb. The Atlanta Hawks are trading Danilo Gallinari and multiple first-round picks. It's going to be three first-round picks, according to Sham Sharania, to the San Antonio Spurs for the Hawks are trading Danilo Gallinari and multiple first-round picks, three first-round picks, to the San Antonio Spurs. And then in addition, there's a pick swap between the teams for DeJounte Murray going to the Atlanta Hawks. Wow. I mean, wow. I mean, again, like I said, I like DeJounte Murray, man. Don't get me wrong. I do. But that's a lot to give up for just three. The Spurs get three first-round picks in the future. I'm not sure if I'm San Antonio. I'm not sure I'm giving up DeJounte Murray right now. Matter of fact, I know I'm not. But then on the flip side of that, the Hawks, three future first-round picks for DeJounte Murray. Again, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm just not a big fan of what I think that is going to become in Atlanta. Trae Young, DeJounte Murray. Obviously, DeJounte Murray would definitely take care of being that secondary ball handler that I absolutely think Trae Young needs there in Atlanta. I don't think there's any question about that. He needs that. He needs that pressure taken off of him, and that's what this is all about for the Hawks. I don't have any doubt about that. But for what DeJounte Murray gives you to give up three future first-round picks, you know, I'm not really talking about Danilo Gallinari with this whole thing. And I don't know. I'm just not sure that DeJounte Murray is worth all of that. We'll see what happens. And then, of course, when you talk about the Hawks, there's always the question of what is going to happen with John Collins going forward. Interesting stuff in Atlanta. And then again, DeJounte Murray is an upgrade defensively at guard, but they still need to figure out what they're going to do with Clint Capela and all those guys for their interior defense there in Atlanta. Interesting stuff going around the National Basketball Association. Anyway, we're going to dip out on that note as we it's been a pretty long show here, but I definitely thank you for joining me right here on Ball About the South. And I definitely hope that you'll like, subscribe, all those good things on whatever platform that you're listening to me on. And hope that I'll see you again here next week. Again, my name is Kerry Wood. Call me C Wood at C Wood on Sports on Twitter, and IG is where you can find me. Come hit me up. Let me know what you think about the show. Let's talk some sports and all those good things. And I'll see you the next time here on Ball About the South.